Hello and welcome to the NFL Legends Podcast. I'm Aeneas Williams. The NFL Draft is right around the corner. Today we're talking about the honor of being selected in the first round, or it's a round I wish I was drafted in. It's the great Rod Woodson, one of the guys that I looked up to. And then I have Jack, Action Jackson, action hero, Steven Jackson out of Oregon State University, who was a first-round pick of the Rams in 2004. Also, Rod, congratulations, 100th anniversary team.
I appreciate it.
That's huge, right? Huge. Can't even imagine that, 100 years. And you being, I want to just start there, Rod. How did you feel when you got that call?
I go back to the very first time when I got the 75th anniversary. It's like so surreal. I'm like, you know, do I really deserve it? Do I not, you know, do I belong in that conversation of the greats? You know, I still see myself as a country boy from Indiana. I just started playing football because my older brothers start playing football. I'm the youngest of three boys, and I'm like, I wanted to play because they was playing. And that's where I picked the game up. And it's led from one thing to the next. I just kept getting a little bit better as I kept getting older. And, you know, and then, you know, being, getting a red coat, you know, being this 100, you know, the centennial team, it's you know, it's kind of like the Hall of Famers of the Hall of Famers. I mean, you know, even though I don't know if you can really say that, but, you know, it's one of those moments, again, where it's kind of so surreal, where they think that you're one of the best players out of the first 100 years of pro football, which, you know, to me is, you know, I accept the honor. I don't know if I deserve it, but I accept the honor.
So everybody talks about being a first-round pick, but what are the things no one talks about? What are the expectations, Steven?
Big, you know, the expectations, you know, at that time, 04, everybody wanted that top 10, right? The money ball kind of pick selection. And I remember I came out as a junior. I was unsure if I was going to come out. I was really dead set on finishing my degree early, you know, in that December, in that next year. But then I had a chance to play in the Las Vegas Bowl, and at Oregon State, we wasn't going to compete for a national championship. You know, no disrespect, but.
And so you had realistic expectations.
I had realistic expectations, right. And we played in the Las Vegas Bowl, which is my hometown. And I went on a tear that night, and I would just remember, I was like, if I'm not going to win a national championship, what a better way to, you know, end my amateur career in front of my hometown. Wow. At the time, it wasn't a Las Vegas Raider, right? So I wasn't going to be able to play in front of them again like that. And I just felt like it was one of those opportunities, right? That's when the word opportunity started really revealing itself to me. And just stepping out on faith.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Rod? Expectations, first round pick, Pittsburgh Steelers? Yeah. I assume they were already winning?
No, well, they won. I mean, the Steel Curtain, they were winning Super Bowls before that, you know, years before that. Mm-hmm. So back in 87, they weren't that good. I mean, my first year, we were 6-10. But to get back to your question is, you know, I didn't, you know, we knew there was going to be a lockout in 87.
Knew it.
So we knew it. I mean, well, at least my agent knew it, which is Marvin Dell.
So coming into getting drafted.
So coming into the whole process, we're like, listen, you're going to get drafted. There's going to be a lockout. You know, if you want to sign, that's going to be up to you. You know, and so once at the end of my college career, I started running track. I got started running at Purdue, left. Went to L.A. to start training to really run because they said there was going to be a lockout. I'm like, well, if it's going to be a lockout, then I'm just going to do what I love to do. I've been running track since I've been 9 years old or, you know, 12 years old for AAU. So I'm going to start doing something I love, and I'm going to find a real good hurling coach. And I did. I went out to L.A., found a guy named Chuck Debus, and my time went from a 13.6 to a 13.22 in 4 weeks. Wow. You know, so I was like, you know, I was still waiting to see what happened. Then the draft comes around after a little while, and, you know, not thinking the Steelers are going to draft me. I never even talked to the Steelers. And that was the first, I remember, that was the first year a Plan B player got,
correct,
got traded, was Chimp Banks, who went to the Chargers. Then Cleveland's there, and they get Junkin, the linebacker from Duke.
Okay.
And so I kind of fall down the board a little bit, which was great for me, not knowing I'm going to go to Pittsburgh because the Saints called me at number 11.
Said, my hometown team, Saints called you.
They're like, we're going to draft you. You're on the board. I'm like, I'll be a Saint. All right. And then at 10, Jim Boston called me on the phone. It's like, you know, we're Pittsburgh Steelers. We want to know if you want to be a Steeler. I'm like, shoot, yeah, I'll be a Steeler. So, I mean, but expectations, I didn't have any. You know, I didn't have any, honestly. You know, I knew who the Steelers were. I knew, you know, the history of how good they were. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew they had Mel Blunt, and you know the rule changes because of Mel.
The Southern University, Mel Blunt. Yeah. HBCUs need to know this. Right? Shout out to Mel.
One of the biggest corners. He might be the biggest corner
still
ever to play.
That still dude is like he can play.
That dude is huge.
You're right.
So you know, I know the history of what they were, and then being around Chuck Knoll. His last 5 years. So, you know, I knew the expectations of what he had. I knew what he wanted to get back to. So, you know, I just wanted to try to be a part of it in any capacity that I could.
And your DB coach was?
My DB coach was Tony Dungy.
Tony Dungy.
He was our DB coach. How about that? He was our DB coach. He was our DB coach and our defense coordinator.
How about that? He coached me in a Senior Bowl. He was on the Kansas City staff, defensive back coach.
Great man.
Pressure. What's the pressure like? Being number one. And you got Rush,
right.
Marshall Faulk,
right.
You coming in, and now they drafting Steven. Yeah. What was that like?
Yeah, so kind of like going back in the story about, you know, the first round expectations. You know, you come out as a kid, you have these expectations, you have these wants, and then you slide, right? So I slide in the first round. And then you get the phone call from the St. Louis Rams at the time. And obviously you have Rush, you have Marshall Faulk there in front of you. And then not only do you slide, but then you go and back up a Hall of Famer and you're like, what is going on? And like, you're like looking at the sky like, huh? I didn't see the puzzles of the pieces of the puzzle coming together.
So when I got the chess master, you're not figuring this out.
I wasn't right? figuring it out at got the time. Right? And it. Then to your point, Rod, you know, I get there and I walk into a huddle. You know, Hall of Famers, Orlando Pace, you know, you have Torrey, Isaac Bruce, you have Torrey Holt, you have all these guys. And I didn't see the blessing at first, but then I sat back and let me step back a little bit in the story. I walk into the locker room and I'm going in between you and Rush, right? Yeah. Right. So I'm sitting between you two and I obviously know the career you guys both have. And that's when I realized, I said, just be quiet and watch. This is that red shirt year for you, you know?
Wow.
And if you think about going top 10, typically those are bad teams.
Correct.
And the leadership that you guys set for me in that year and in that locker room, I think set me on the path to have a 12-year career.
Wow.
Because I saw the work ethic. I saw you running your gassers between offensive, defense of sets, you know? I saw the way Marshall used to watch film. I saw the way he made sure that the route tree was ran out the backfield like it was a receiver.
Wow.
The things that I didn't realize was important in the game, especially as a running back, I just thought, just give me the ball and run. You know, but especially at my size, right? You're like, get out the way, right? But to see that example,
wow,
the intentional work put in behind the scenes, I think, was just a blessing.
Wow. Yeah. Rod, you were drafted after Jerome Brown. Some of these young guys don't know who Jerome Brown was. What was that like?
I mean, you know, Jerome was a player. You know, coming out of college. And
University of Miami.
The University of Miami.
Defensive tackle.
Yep.
He's now deceased. You guys may not know.
And, you know, so, you know, just, you know, our draft class was a pretty good draft class. And then when I go to the Steelers, we had that 87 draft for the Steelers was a really good draft.
Was Carnell in that draft?
Carnell came the following year.
Okay.
But we had myself, another defensive back was Delton Hall from Clemson. Thomas Everett from Baylor, who was the first Heisman, he was the first Jim Thorpe Award winner in the history of that award in 1987 from Baylor. He was one of the draftees. Greg Lloyd, Merrill Hodge, Gerald
wow.
Williams. I mean, our guys, Lockett, Charles Lockett. We had a lot of guys that played double-digit years in the National Football League on that draft. And, you know, back then it was 12 rounds back then, so... You know, you're talking about, you know, not really knowing. I was at home, sitting at home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and got the call. Didn't sign my contract until October 28th that year. I only played 6 games that year, my rookie year. My first game I played, I played safety. So it was like, you know, Dwayne Woodruff, he was the corner. Delton was already playing. Lupe Sanchez from UCLA, he was playing already. Lupe was a good player. So they had all their positions. So they were trying to find ways to get me on the field. They put me at safety in a nickel package. They played me at linebacker because I was you know, I played safety in college. Okay. So when I came to Pittsburgh, I was probably, you know, 215 when I was running track. Okay. So they put me at linebacker package, which is probably not the smartest thing to do. They saw me at linebacker. They're like, check, check, ISO. Check, ISO. I'm running at 26 right there. I was like, oh my God. I mean, the first time I had to do it, I was like, man, I don't know about playing down in here. Now this is, I want to go back a little further. But you know, Chuck was just trying to find ways to get me on the field. And then I knew the expectations because the culture in the building is about winning. When you first walked in the building, there was three Super Bowl trophies sitting right there. Mm. And we're like, okay, well. And then, you know, Rocky Blyer, Mean Joe Green was our defensive line coach. Yeah. So Mean Joe Green was in the building every single day. Mel always was in the building. Rocky Blyer would come in the building, you know.
So these legends are in.
These are Donnie Shell was still there. Mike Webster was still there. And Stalwarts was still there. Wow. So I got to play with those guys. Donnie was my roommate my rookie year. So we, you know, every home game, which was only three for me, you know, I got to be with him in the room.
Shout out to Donnie.
Who just got into the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
What Donnie did for me is he just gave me like an understanding of what a pro looks like. And I was a knucklehead kid from Fort Wayne, Indiana. I just played football, man. I was kind of stupid. I didn't listen to a lot of people. I was a hothead. You said something to me, I'd be like, okay, say it again. You know, and then Donnie's like, hey, just be a pro, do the right thing, always be on time. You know, this everything that you're asked to do, just do it without question. And then at first, I didn't understand why he was there, but after he left and in the years, you know, preceding that, I was like, oh, okay, that's what he's talking about. And Dwayne Woodruff, who's a great, you know, he played for quite a long time for the Steelers out of Louisville. I played 4 years or 3 years with Dwayne, and Dwayne was the same type of guy. He was just always doing the right thing. I mean, he's a judge now in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So I had that mentorship. Yeah, he's a judge. So I had a mentorship outside of having Tony there, who was teaching me how to play the game at the cornerback position. But then I had some good mentors about being a man outside of football.
You know, Action Jackson, you mentioned it already. The players today, you don't see players playing as long, right? So what was it like and what are potentially today's players missing when it comes down to coming into that locker room, as you talked about, Rod, with those veterans that are there?
You said, what are they missing?
What are they missing, yes.
The wisdom, I believe, you know. There's some things, the nuances of the game, you just don't get them, the X of those, or even in the film. And, you know, you're just talking about coming up with a sleep pattern, right? The things you don't think about as a young warrior, you just think you're invisible, especially, you know, early 20s. Mm-hmm. And then to continue to try to burn the candle on both ends, if you don't have somebody sit you down and explain to you that all that affects your performance. Because when you start talking to guys about performing and, you know, leaving a legacy for themselves and being proud of, you know, the things they have accomplished, you trigger them in a different way. Instead, you know, and that's what I was seeing from you guys, the example you guys are doing. Eating clean, I didn't know what a portion size was. You know, all those little things, right? Like, it's like...
He said portion size.
Yeah, like, I'm like, well, what is that? What are you... Like, three strips of bacon? I'm like, no, I need the whole plate. You know, I'm like... So it's like the little nuances of that on top of how to conduct yourself in an interview. I was a guy that... I was 7 years old. I had an incident at the Boys and Girls Club, right? So baseball diamond field. The line drive didn't catch the glove. It caught my face, right? So, and from that, I became like really conscious of my face and things like that because I had to have reconstructive surgery. Wow. So that put me in a shell. That set me back as a kid. So then you get on this big stage and I don't have any media training. Nobody's, you know, then I had that in my history, you know, that trauma. And I didn't know the power of media at the time when I walked into the NFL in the locker room. I was really comfortable just putting on that helmet and running hard, right, and figuring that if you love the game, I will hope you appreciate the way I play the game. But as far as being on a platform and using it to the level that I know I'm capable of now, right, that was not a thought, you know, 15, 16 years ago. So being these young guys now, if you don't have a veteran that's not only sets a good example, but willing to share that knowledge, you'll miss it. Wow. And you can still miss it today.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. What about you, Rod? There's very little internet back then.
There was no internet back then. The computers
I was
had,
being gracious to you.
The computers had DOS. Right. And most people don't know what DOS is, but it's a backside computer anyway. But I mean, for me, you know, it was I think what's missing when you don't have vets is that you do miss that leadership. And when I came in, you had to be a really good rookie to make the squad. And today, you got to be a really good veteran to make the squad. That's the difference.
Wow.
Back then, our backups were 5-year, 6-year players who were vets, who understood, who played all the special teams. And there were backups at positions. So if your guys got hurt, you had a veteran guy who can play and step in who played before. Well, now they're all rookies that are backups in the National Football League. And I think what's missing is that, you know, I know, for at least for me, what I was given from my veteran guys when I first got there, as I got older and moved to different teams, I felt it like when I went to Baltimore, you know, Ray Lewis was a baby. Ray was right. His third year. And you know how locker rooms work, right? Where locker rooms, you always sit with your group.
Right.
I didn't sit with the DBs. They set me with the linebackers. They set me in between Ray Lewis and Peter Boulware. I'm like, well, I guess I've been talking to Ray and Peter. And then I just befriended Ray and Peter. We talked every single day, just about being a man, doing what's right, you know, showing up on time, being courteous to people. So all the little things that was given to me, I think that's missing in the National Football League because you don't have those vets sprinkled in.
Organically.
Yes. Right. Now, the teams that are really good, they have a culture, and they do have vets sprinkled in, and they have leaders. The teams that kind of fall apart throughout the years, they don't. They're young in their locker room, and you know what I tell guys all the time is that until you take ownership of what is yours, which is the team as players, your team is never going to win a Super Bowl.
Explain
You'll never be
that,
successful.
Bro.
So, if the coach is always the one person everybody's always talking about. And he's the leader. He's the face of the team. He's the face of the franchise. You know, outside of, you know, like Bill Belichick, mm-hmm. normally your team's not winning a lot of football games because you got to find leaders in the locker room who's going to take ownership. Yeah, it's, you know, if, you know, taking ownership is if a guy in your team is saying something to the media or did something inside the locker room, you're going to go to him and say, hey, man, you shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, back in the old school way, you'd be like, okay, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. That's our first warning. You do it again, they're going to come back and say, if you do that one more time, you're really going to have an issue with everybody in this locker room.
Right.
They don't do that. Well, first of all, you don't have the vets in the locker room to do it. But the teams who do still have that vet and have that culture inside of their building, those teams are still successful today.
Correct.
You know, it's just, I feel for the younger guys who don't have a veteran to lean on, to get knowledge, to gain knowledge, to talk to. The coaches are younger, the players are younger. And I'm like, where do they get their wisdom? Where do they get their advice from? Where do they turn? Mm-hmm. Each other? And when they turn to each other, they still are all trying to learn it,
together,
you know, together, learn together, which is not a bad thing.
Right.
It's not a bad thing, because in 1987, we had 5 rookies in our secondary. We had 3 drafted, 2 holdovers from the scab team, so to speak. So we had 5 rookies, and we learned how to, when we were getting beat, we were like, okay, we can't do that anymore. You know, so we learned and we grew together.
From
so that can happen
experiences.
From our own experience. So
right.
That can happen. That takes a while, but I still had Woodruff and Donnie Shell, and we still had those guys coming in, like Mel Blunt. He came in the locker room quite a bit. Mm. And he invited us out to the ranch. He has a ranch out there for boys who get in trouble, correction boys. Instead of going to jail, they go to the ranch and work the ranch for him. So we used to go out there, and it was eye-opening. Like, man, this guy is, you know, he poured his whole, you know, career into doing what's right for young men. And so that was eye-opening. So stuff like that, these young kids don't get if they don't have those mentors in the locker room, which, you know, I feel bad for them if they don't have it.
Let me ask you, can I ask really, sure. about that wrinkle? You said something that it's nothing wrong with having a young secondary, a young team, but I think free agency also throws that, you sprinkle that in as well. So you didn't even have a chance to jail those five, or you don't, so it makes it really difficult for these young guys now.
You were 21 when you were drafted? What were you not ready for it when you got to the league?
All that money. Wow. Just be honest. All that money. I'm not sharing anything that's not like my mom and parents haven't shared, you know, their faith leaders. My dad was a gambler, you know. I grew up in Las Vegas. So I recall times in my life where I would hear my parents having disagreements about, you know, money. Mm-hmm. And then to have, you know, to have that dynamic in your household and then to then be thrusted with this responsibility of this wealth, at that point, it's like, who do you turn to, right? Because mm-hmm. the person that you would probably trust the most, he was out of that situation, but then he didn't trust himself. So he didn't want to give me advice. Mm-hmm. So at that point, there was a man in the church that he's my mentor now. And he worked in Wall Street for a very long time. But my parents were smart enough to know that they couldn't give me that wisdom of how to, you know, handle and take care of my money. So that's when I realized mentorship was really important. And going to Rob, what you were saying, when you have these different roles and people that look like you and people that you feel like you could trust and have these conversations with, mm-hmm. They don't always come in the locker room.
Correct.
Right? But they're still hard to find. And I think that's what is important, that if you find those people in your life that's willing to be, you know, a sounding board or someone just to be able to get some of this frustration off of you because you're young. And not only do you have the responsibility of trying to provide for yourself and your family, but then you have to put on a face in the public. Mm. And the NFL, Sundays are great, but sometimes Wednesday morning is not. You know what I mean? And it's really hard to, if you want to say that and just be real, you're going to get seven people saying, oh, I switched spots with you. And it's not saying that I'm not grateful or I'm complaining. It's just, I'm human. I'm just trying to figure it out.
And when you say Wednesday mornings are not necessarily great, what were some of the things you experienced on a Wednesday morning that you could share with us that made it for you? Love being there, but here's a tension that I deal with.
I think being a big man, so a lot of people think you don't have, you could take a lot, and then they don't think you have feelings, right? So going through the stretch in St. Louis, we were a bad team.
Sure.
And being a bigger guy, you're getting the ball 30, 35 times on Sunday. Then on Wednesday, we had so many different coaches. Everybody thought they had to make the team tough because you're a bad team. So now on Wednesday morning, I'm a second-year guy, third-year guy. Now I'm getting live reps in practice, right? So it's like, who is my advocate? Like, who is going to stand up and say something for me? And
you felt this.
Oh, you feel it. Oh, yeah, you feel it. Because Wednesday, you could barely pick up a cell phone. On top of that, this is when we play on the actual turf, you know, like, right. So now I'm having another blow, right? So when you, on that Wednesday morning, and you don't have, you're just beat up, and let's just say you have a gimp in your stride, and now you have coaches, you know, questioning, like, are you faking it? Are you just trying to get out of practice? Or, you know, are you not strong enough? You're not tough enough? It's just like.
So no, this mental.
It's a mental battle.
Rod, how'd you handle the mental part? I remember, Rod, in your mental, I can remember the play when you injured your knee.
10th play, opening game, Detroit Lions.
Detroit Lions.
I did something I never have done before. I broke open a brand new pair of shoes right before the game and did not wear them prior to that week. And normally I would wear them throughout the whole week, and we played the old AstroTurf,
correct?
The Three River Stadium. That stuff was, and it was hot. And I put these brand new Pumas on, which I wore that my first 3 years, and then I plant Barry cuts back inside.
Barry Sanders.
And my foot stays straight, and my knee turns. Uh-huh. And normally, you know, if I'm wearing the shoes, my shoe would have turned.
Turns, right.
I would have been fine. But as soon as my foot planted, I was like, why did you wear those shoes, you stupid guy? And then, so it was, to me, it was like I hurt my knee. I'm like, woe's me, why? I meet the doctor on Monday. Doctor says it's going to be 4 months, 4 to 6 months. I'm like, 4 months? Well, that's playoffs. hey, coach, I can get back for playoffs. I can get back for playoffs. I'm going to heal fast. I'm going to get back for playoffs. And Bill was one of those guys. He was open. He was a player's coach. He listened. And the great thing is I had Carnell Lake on my team. Mm-hmm. And Carnell moved from – played outside linebacker in college, moved to safety, went from safety to corner, and right. played really well that right. year at corner. And if so if he wasn't there, they would have had to put me on IR to bring some more guys in just to have that roster spot.
Right.
So Carnell moved over. Nobody else got hurt in the secondary. Carnell balled out at corner. And they kept that light on at the end of the tunnel for me for that first year of me being in the Super Bowl.
Bill Cowher.
Bill Cowher did, yes. yes. Mm-hmm. So they gave me that opportunity.
Action Jackson. What didn't we know as a rookie? What did the veterans maybe not know that what you were experiencing as a rookie? And at what point did you feel comfortable sharing what you were going through with a vet? Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit.
So as a rookie, you yeah. went through, you said, yeah. man, these tensions,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And you're going through it. You're in this locker room. You're in between Marshall and I. You got these veterans around. But at what point were you comfortable where you could actually share what you're really feeling like in that locker room with a vet to get thoughts or something like that?
I mean, that's a tough question to answer. I was saying, when you walk into a locker room like that, that locker room, you guys were rolling, right? Early right. 2000s, you guys were.
So you're jumping on the moving train.
You're jumping on the moving train. Right. And everybody in the locker room is not as nice as Aeneas Williams, right?
That's true. Amen.
So I would say that. I would say that's the thing.
Now,
I,
what was that like?
I think mentorship.
You get in the locker room, yeah. your first round draft pick. When did you feel in that locker room that, man, some of these cats not nice, right? Yeah, everybody's smiling, but you're coming into an environment, a moving train already going. That's so I'm attempting to help the people hear what you were feeling. Because a lot of times as men, we just deal with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't know where to turn, to be honest with you. I didn't know who to trust in the locker room. I didn't know if I would share something with you, was it going to go to back to the coach, or was it going to go upstairs? Wow. Or what I said about another teammate that I felt, and I was just trying to figure out if that's how he is or not. But then he goes back to that person. You know, like the gossip. Sure. I mean, men gossip too, right?
Sure. So. You mean men gossip?
So
let's delete that out.
So trying to figure out not only who I am as a young man in an environment that is full of high performers. How do I figure out?
Was that pressure? Did you feel
it was pressure internal? It was internal
right,
pressure
right.
because I always said when Marshall came off the field, I did not want anybody in the stadium to know that the difference because that means I'm not doing my job.
Gotcha.
You know, so that internal pressure there just to perform at his level was already
for
peaked,
you.
Right?
For you.
Was peaked. Then on top of that, trying to figure out, I went to school in Oregon, very liberal state. Grew up in Vegas, pretty liberal city, right? So then you move to the Midwest.
St. Louis, yeah.
Very, not so good.
Not so much,
right? That's so, a gracious way to say St. Louis. Shout out to the St. Louis, right?
So there's all this, there's a lot internal going on.
You got a lot going on.
And still trying to figure out how to find that voice because that's that trauma when I was 7 years old. So I would say, I think a lot of people didn't realize that I was a long time, I didn't really have the confidence of speaking on not only the things that that was probably holding me back from thriving even faster,
right.
but I just didn't know if it was macho enough to even say it or ask it, right? So all these things
so
are
So you're
just,
dealing with this?
All internal. But then everybody's looking at this 6'2", 200.
Yes.
Yeah.
First like, rounder.
Yeah, like, oh, he's fine. Yeah.
So what does a veteran need to know today for that rookie that's in a locker room like you? What does a veteran, a current veteran in a locker room, need to know on how to connect with that guy who's feeling what you're feeling? What do we need to know? How would we approach you?
I think if somebody went in that locker room and just said, how are you doing? How are you dealing with the pressure? I think that would have opened up me, my heart, to be able to then say, you know what? Wow. That never happened, right?
Wow. That's amazing. Because the reason why I'm saying it's amazing, literally, when you're talking right now, it's as if you're in that locker room right now.
Yeah.
Because I hear the emotion.
Yeah.
I hear what you were really going through.
It was a lot at the time, you know, it was a lot. But then I think enduring that,
right,
it made me want to be a big brother to all the other guys afterwards. Because then once I found myself, I was like, now I want to protect these young guys. I just want you to know you have a safe haven with me. Jack is a vault. I'm not going to say anything, whatever we discuss between you and I. But know that
trust.
I've been there. Yeah. And I'm the one person you can trust.
When did your epiphany come? When did you finally awaken, like, okay, I got this? When did you ever?
I don't know quite the time, the moment, but I would say I can't remember who we lost to. We lost a game. It was a tight one. And my pops, my dad, he always met me outside the locker, at the locker room. And I looked at him, I just bawled, man. I just started crying.
Crying.
And he was like, what's wrong with you? You know, he thought physically I was hurt, you know? And I said, no, I said, I'm doing everything I can, we just can't win. We just can't get her over the hump. And I said, you know, to hear the crowd boo you, and your home crowd boo you,
right,
and to not have consistency at head coach, right? So there's no real consistent leader that I could feel like that was that compass to follow. I said to him, Pops, I just said, I need you, man. I need you. And this is, him and my mom are still living, 50 years of marriage. But I think it took me to tell my dad that I need your voice. It doesn't matter that you never played in the NFL. Just help me be a better man.
Wow.
And I think that helped our relationship grow more, because at a certain point, I think you look at, like, he's making a lot of money. You know, he has his own family.
Time to step back.
Time to step back. Right. And I'm like, no, I need you.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. How did your dad feel?
Oh, he wanted that because he didn't have his father in his life.
Wow.
So he didn't know how to be a father, and I have two older sisters. So I think me saying that to him, he thought being a good dad was a certain way, a certain model that he didn't get, you know, the directions to. I'm like, no, it's really what I'm trying to find, my voice. You trying to find your voice. Let's find it together.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's just organic. This is not like you want to sit down with a counselor and somebody said, hey, you need to tell it to your dad.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and that's great what counselors do, help guys understand that connection to the fathers a lot of times, or to the mother. So as we close this out, Rod, what advice would you guys, Stephen, give to first-round draft picks?
I would say be open-minded. I mean, it's a little different today because, well, it's really not. We see it differently because we want our first-rounders to come in and be veterans, and it's really unfair. You know, Stephen just said, it's like that third year. I always give every player should get 3 years of figuring it out, because it takes them a little while. Some guys figure out a little bit faster, some guys a little bit slower. But it normally takes most players about 3 years to figure out, like, oh, I belong here, and I can't play in this league. You know, coaching in this league, I realized everybody that comes in the building and comes in that room, in different rooms, they don't all believe that they belong. They don't all believe that they can play at a high level because they're playing against the best of the best. Regardless of the talent.
Regardless of pick.
Right. And there's some guys who they have more confidence, but there's certain guys that you'll see that they really don't know if they belong here. And so, you know, as a player being in the room, I'm just like, know that, you know, I tell all guys, like, you've been playing this game your whole life. Most guys who play in the National Football League started playing when they were probably 7, 8 years old, 9 years old. It's the same game. You just get paid to do it now in front of a big crowd. I said, just go enjoy yourself and go play. I said, everything else, learning the game, find a person in the locker room who's been in the league for a long time and talk to him and mentor, let him be your mentor. Because he's going to show you the right things to do. Don't go to Bobby, who just got there last year, who wants to hang out at the club all night. Because Bobby's going to get you fired.
What about you, Steven? What would you tell a first-round draft pick?
One, everything. I concur. Everything. But on top of that, I always tell the young running backs, like, tonight they'll perform. I always say to them, always remain hungry and humble. You do those, you know, you do those things, you'll be right. You'll be all right. And if you remain humble enough, you can always learn in any situation. Right. And I think I always was able to remain humble enough that even despite that first year, that rookie year, not playing a lot, you know, backing up a Hall of Famer, being frustrated with that, every time he took a rep, I made a mental rep of it. And I was like, that's me carrying it. Because again, I didn't want, when I got on the field, I didn't want the crowd to know drop, Marshall
right.
was off.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Well, gentlemen, this has been fantastic. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening. And the best is yet to come. Thank you, Steven. Thank you, Rod.
This has been the NFL Legends Podcast. To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.